Welcome to the Breakfast Leadership Show, where we interview global thought leaders on business, leadership, and life. Here's your host, keynote speaker, best-selling author, and chief burnout officer of the Breakfast Leadership Network, Michael Levitt.
Welcome back. I've got John Caldwell online. John, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you, Michael?
I am awesome. Been looking forward to this conversation for a while because you work for a well-known organization that's been around a bit. Definitely not a startup, although in our pre-show, we kind of talked about something where, you know, in maybe in a similar way, you might be a little bit. So for those that don't know you, why don't you share a little bit about you, and then we're going to dive into this great conversation.
That sounds great. Yeah. So my name is John Caldwell. I am the chief people officer with Valvoline. I've been, a lifelong human resource professional, been with Valvoline for about 7 years. I've been in this chief people officer role for just about 4 years now. So was able to, you know, took the role right as we started to navigate COVID, which was a great time to jump into a new role like this. And then we've continued to have a lot of change through my 4 year run in this role thus far. And then prior to that, the bulk of my career, I would say I spent with Fifth Third Bank, which is headquartered in Cincinnati, top 15 bank in the U.S., and had an opportunity to have a handful of different roles during that 14-year run, HR business partner type roles in the field and on the corporate side, and then leading a talent management work development type function was the last role that I held when I was at Fifth Third. So it's been interesting. I don't know that when I started my career in human resources about 25 years ago that I would spend a career in it, but I found it to, you know, provide a lot of unique challenges. No 2 days are alike, and really enjoy the connection that you have from an HR perspective with the business, being able to drive and enable business performance. So it's been fun.
Oh, definitely. And I used to bank at 1 2/3 bank. That's what I used to call that.
That's right.
Instead of Fifth Third. You know, I'm just, you know, thinking back to, you know, elementary school and Mrs. Nicholas going, it's not Fifth Third. It's like, yeah, it is. Cincinnati, there's a bank down there. Come on. Because I grew up in Detroit. So I was familiar with them for a very long time on my trips down to Florida or through Ohio and going to SeaWorld or Kings right. Island or all the other fun stuff that's there. So, yeah, and it's HR is always one of those interesting, ever-changing industries. And, you know, you jumping into that new role at the beginning of COVID when there was no policy or procedure manual on that, even though we had history of the last big pandemic, which was a century ago, there wasn't a lot of documentation because work back then and work now is completely different. And you're like, wait a minute, remote work, what do we use to connect with people if we hadn't been doing it before? And how do we navigate all of this when we are the type of business that we are? And then, of course, you know, as we're going to talk about a bit, Valvoline changed a bit. Yeah. It's probably a very light term on their business. So, okay, you've got all of these things going on at once, and you're like, all right, you know, how? You know, I know the answer to this already, but you know, how did you approach that? Because every day, just in a quote unquote normal day in HR, there's always things thrown at you, but then all these additional complexities came into play. You know, how did you navigate that? And, you know, how did you lean on your team and how did they lean on you to, you know, kind of navigate through these, you know, crazy times that we faced?
Yeah. You know, I would say it was probably around March of 2020 when I moved into this role. I was already in the organization and you hit it. The first thing I would say, it was definitely a team effort. There were a number of us who were partnering together to make decisions. A couple of guiding principles, I would say, because there was no roadmap for it. You know, I think if you recall, gosh, and it's almost, you know, you have PTSD talking about COVID again, but when really COVID first hit the U.S. here in March of 2020, we all kind of thought it was going to be a week or two and then would be back to normal, right? And then, okay, maybe it's a month or two and so on and so forth. So you're really taking one day at a time. There's no roadmap for it. I think the key principles that we followed first is just, above all else, keep our employees safe and our guests safe in the stores. So the decisions that we made, we really tried to follow the CDC's guidance throughout the pandemic and try to stay lockstep with them. We figured they know a lot more than we know. How does their guidance then apply to our workplace? The other thing I say we did was, from a business perspective, is just really take a conservative approach. So cut discretionary spending. You know, maybe there was some technology implementations that we had planned for that year. And so now you're going to pull that back just because you don't know, you know, how the business is going to perform during COVID. So I think those two things, staying close as a leadership team, we increased our communications. I mean, we all went home for a point in time, but we really, you know, we started to have daily, every morning huddles because things were changing rapidly. So it was good for us as an executive team to stay connected, stay close on how things were evolving. And then I think, you know, the other thing, oh, I lost my train of thought there. Oh, the other thing I would say is, and it actually turned out pretty well for us. We had a great year in 2020, great year in 2021. So we were one of those organizations that that did ultimately thrive. You know, we were deemed an essential business. Preventative maintenance on your vehicles is certainly falls into that category. So that helped us out quite a bit. And I think the strength of our culture just allowed us to remain connected, to remain focused on the guests, on one another throughout a really difficult period.
Very, very helpful on that, because you have a customer-centric value, or it's in your DNA. It was just, okay, we want to maintain what we do within the guidelines of guidance from the CDC and other entities and essential services. It's like, okay, how do we provide those services, yeah, protect the wellness of our team, but also protect our customers so everyone can get what they need to get in these times without, you know, any additional added risks in our environments. And, you know, frequenting, you know, your oil change shops, you know, during that time, it was, you know, apparent that, you know, they had, you know, followed guidelines and they were, you know, very careful on things, and, you know, it was appreciated, you know, by the customers, because it was a way where people could feel, all right, a sense of almost normal. Yeah, because I think, especially in those early days of the pandemic, I think that was one of the things that so many people missed, was just the normality of things that we do. And when you could go into a shop, you know, because we couldn't go into restaurants, we couldn't necessarily go into a lot of stores or things like that, or malls. It was nice to be able to go into a place like that and have kind of, you know, a return to normal sort of thing. And you know, that, you know, obviously that happens, it happens naturally because you do it, but it also happens because there was intent there to make sure that you created this environment where people felt warm and welcome, and your organization was doing that anyway. So, go ahead.
Oh, well, I was just going to say, Michael, sorry to interrupt. And to that end, I mean, you know, I'd be remiss. I cannot thank or recognize our employees, and we call them, we use the term family to describe our organization. So kind of put a V in front of family with the Valvoline. Our family members, our employees who work in our service centers, I mean, continue to show up, continue to serve our guests each and every day. I mean, that was such a critical, I mean, it was the key to our success. They were the key to our success during that time, because we certainly had our fair share of challenges from a turnover perspective and staffing perspective through that period. Although I think we fared better than most retailers during that time as well, because we were able to keep our stores open and not cut hours or okay, we're not going to be able to open on Sundays or Mondays or whatever. So, but that sort of sacrifice that our team members made during that period of uncertainty, it was just tremendous. And I mean, it was the reason why we were able to be successful in 20 and 21.
Yeah, and it provided them some normalcy as well. And it goes both ways. The organization was able to allow that, because a lot of organization wanted to, but they couldn't because they weren't deemed essential in all, you know, I'm not going to get into any of debate on that. I always tell people this. It's like, when you're in the midst of a storm, you have to do what you can do with the information you have at that moment in time. Hindsight and reflection, sure. Okay. Yeah, we maybe could have done that different. Maybe we could have done that different. But you don't know that when you're right in the middle of the storm. You're literally just, how do we change people's oil? how's our supply chain going? What's that all about? You know, there's so many moving parts in all of this, and to be able to keep operations running and serve people speaks volumes about, you know, the organization. And, you know, you don't last for, you know, over a century if you're not taking care of people. So that speaks volumes. So in our pre-show, we were talking about some things that I, you know, wasn't aware of, about how the organization made a pretty big shift in recent years. And I wasn't aware of it. And, I'd love to hear your thoughts and talk about that a little bit, about, you know, how Valvoline has changed a little bit and how you were able to navigate that with your team as well, with your family. Cause, you know, that's one of those things. It's kind of a big thing. It's like, yeah, you know, we're going to change some things. And so I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, absolutely, Michael. So late September of 2021, so we're really kind of starting to come up for air from the pandemic, we announced our intention to pursue strategic alternatives and really separate our business. So historically, Valvoline, we've had two distinct segments to our business. There's the services side of the business, which is what I was referring to earlier. That's our retail, the retail side of our business that largely operates under the brand Valvoline Instant Oil Change. And then in Canada, Great Canadian Oil Change. And we have about 1,800 stores today, kind of footprint wide across the US and Canada. And then there's the product side of our business that is, think of that as more of, we buy the base oil, we buy the additives, we blend and package and distribute the products then to AutoZones, Walmarts, Advance Auto parts of the world. If you're a do-it-yourselfer, you can, you know, buy the product and change your own oil as an example. Or there are, you can go to retailers that aren't Valvoline Instant Oil Change, tire stores, car dealerships, auto repair shops, and they may put Valvoline oil in your car, kind of the installer channel network that we have. And there's actually a global aspect to that business as well, where we get into heavy duty marine, rail, so on and so forth. So we actually, at the time, we didn't know what the outcome would be, but we knew that as we looked ahead, the future of both companies, the investment, not to dive into the detail, but the investment needed for both organizations was very different when we looked strategically out over the next 5 years. As the car park evolves, the electrification of the vehicle, it's hard to really fully invest in growing both businesses. And then even as a publicly traded company, we were a tough organization sometimes to find good comps for. So as an analyst or, you know, as an investor kind of looking to research our organization, were we a retail organization? Were we a manufacturing organization global? The answer was yes to all of those. So we ended up, the outcome of that was we sold the product side of our business to Aramco. Now, Aramco is a Saudi-owned, massive organization. I think Aramco and Apple kind of are neck and neck for largest market cap organizations in the world. And so we closed on that deal March 1st of 2023, was the legal closing for that. So it took about a year and a half, really, to get to that point. And the good news is the outcome was, I think, fantastic for both. So now our products business is under the umbrella of an organization that will truly invest in their growth, specifically, you know, across the globe, not just here in the United States. And then from the Valvoline Inc., the retail organization now that is the public side of the company, and that's where I land. That's the side of the business that I remain with. We are accelerating our growth into the future. I mentioned we're about 1,800 stores today. As we've done the math, we believe that we can get to about 3,000 or up to 3,500 stores. There's room for that. We still have a small piece, the overall oil change business. And so we're excited about being able to focus on the retail side of our business and really accelerate that growth. And so through that 18-month period, obviously, a lot of change to navigate. And so I think if I could dive into maybe a couple things that we tried to focus on, you know, through that keys to success there, if that makes sense, like, was that a good place to go? So, you know, really, I think there's a ton of uncertainty. So the first thing that we really tried to do was communicate. And I would say lesson learned, we probably could have done more. I don't know that you can communicate enough. And sometimes we might have had a lull in our communication because there wasn't progress being made that we could share publicly. But I still think in hindsight, you just cannot communicate enough to the employee base when things like this occur. So you try to remove that uncertainty as well. There were some actions that we took to help give assurance that people would either have a role on the other side of this, or if they didn't have a role, they would be taken care of financially. So we made some decisions, put some programs in place that gave our employees that sort of assurance in the front end. As we worked to navigate the change, and then once we knew the outcome and that we were going to sell products, the products business to Aramco, we were able to then quickly kind of fortify leadership structures for both organizations. And I think that helped give assurance as we were able to announce kind of who the leadership, kind of a core leadership team was going to be for both organizations. That gives assurance. It's familiar faces. There's leadership stability that's provided there. And then, you know, a guiding principle, because truly this was unlike a lot of divestitures or sales of a business asset for an organization, is really the product side of our business was over half of our annual revenue. So we were selling, I mean, a really significant chunk of our organization to Aramco. And so as we started to make decisions on organizational structure, the division of talent, the guiding principle was we want to set up both organizations for success. And so it was not a Valvoline Inc., you know, we're going to maintain, here's our leadership structure. And then, you know, Valvoline Global Operations, you're going to have to just figure it out and add leaders as you move forward. We really divided up leaders and talent in a very equitable way that both organizations were able to succeed and hit the ground running. The other good news I would say is both organizations remain U.S. headquartered, based here in Lexington, Kentucky, and it actually created roles. So if you think about it, Aramco has set up Valvoline Global Operations to operate as its own separate affiliate organization. So they have a CEO, a CFO, a chief people officer, general counsel, et cetera. And so it provided promotional opportunities for some of our team members and then created new opportunities here in the U.S. and in Lexington for other roles as we divide it up. You know, now you're setting up two separate HR functions, finance teams, IT teams, so on and so forth. So, and I think, you know, through it all, you know, of course you need a steady hand from a leadership perspective. You need to continue to communicate not only what's going on, but why we're making this significant change. But I think just the strength, I go back again to kind of the strength of our culture and our people that's really helped us survive and thrive through this significant transition. I would tell you that our turnover rate remained really low. Like as the HR guy heading into something like this, you're worried that the uncertainty organizationally and individually is going to generate just a tremendous amount of churn potentially. And we didn't have that. You know, I think we lost people just like you do in the normal course of business, but I don't think it really didn't speak or it really didn't spike at all during that period. And again, I think it's a testament to the leadership that we've got in place, but more really the culture that we've got in place and folks, you know, really leaning on each other through those periods of uncertainty.
I want to take strong leadership and caring for your people, which we've talked about quite a bit during our chat, to, you said, you know, keep people updated. Publicly traded company, there's only so much you can say. You can't say everything, you know, because, you know, if something gets out, you know, that could literally derail the deal. And then all of a sudden you've got attorneys getting involved and it just is a mess. And you want to avoid that if you can for a variety of reasons. But, you know, just being able to, you know, navigate that. And I know a company that is looking to go similar situation where they're looking to divest one of their divisions and they haven't been communicating well with the people in that one division. So as you can imagine, there's anxiety, there's element of distrust, there's people going, I think I'm going to leave because I don't want to be packaged out because they're not going to give me a package that's worth anything. So let's, you know, jump before they throw me out type of thing. And it just impacts the environment even more where, you know, even people that have been there for a long time, they check out. They're there, but they're not. And what does that do? That just lowers the quality of products or services that this organization is providing, which diminishes the value, which actually hurts the other organization saying, oh, here's this. And then, you know, everybody does due diligence when they're looking to acquisition. They're looking at everything, including, you know, what you had for breakfast type of thing. And they see the reviews. Okay, this company's doing this. It's gone to this. And they're like, wait a minute. You know, we were going to offer you this, but we're hearing all this. It's losing value. So now it just creates this big monster. So it's prevented by how you handled it, saying, here's what we can tell you. There's other things, negotiations, all that stuff we cannot talk about because of a variety of different things. But, you know, we're going to map this out, keep you updated as we can along the way. For those that, you know, won't be moving forward, you know, kudos to you and your team for saying, okay, we're going to give you as soft of a landing as we possibly can so you can go on to your next adventure, which may have been, and I'm sure there were cases where some people that were on, you know, the side that you're on right now probably looked at opportunities at, you know, the new spun-off organization and vice versa. And it's, again, when you have a healthy environment, that creates those opportunities. And again, those people that had been there going, well, I'm in this to win it. I'm in this to help out. Let's have some fun and adventure, you know, through obviously, you know, some pretty big changes. So it speaks volumes to the leadership for sure.
Yeah. And I think, you know, people have long memories when it comes to periods of uncertainty like this. And I think long before I arrived here, you know, at Valvoline, this organization has a good track record of taking care of its people. And so, you know, you don't get that overnight. You don't, it's like a reputation, right? It can take a lifetime to build it up and a moment to tear it down. And so I feel very fortunate in the role that I'm at now, you know, joining the organization that has been so people focused for so many years. And we had a significant transition. We navigated and it actually brought me to the organization. So we went public in 2016. Valvoline was a business within Ashland Oil for many, many years. And then Ashland spun off. We did an IPO with Valvoline in 2016. And so similarly, you know, a period of uncertainty, you're standing up Valvoline as a separate public entity, public organization. And I think that that Valvoline and the leadership that was in place at that time did the right things to make sure that people were taken care of, landed on their feet on the other side of it then. I think, you know, we earned that trust again with how we navigated COVID as best we could. And so then when something like this comes, you know, it is a little bit of Maslow's hierarchy of needs. You know, people hear the news and they're naturally, we all are immediately going to go to what does this mean for me? And so I think if you can give folks comfort up front, do the best you can to communicate what you can when you can and give them the assurances that you're able to give, even though there is the uncertainty that lies ahead. And then you can just lean on people trusting that, okay, this is a good organization and they take care of their people. They always have. So why would I expect any different this time? And there's things, I'm saying all that, and we're not the, there are things in hindsight that I wish we would have done differently. Like I said, I think we should have communicated even more. And so you always have that kind of hindsight being what it is and lessons learned. But I think on the whole, we navigated things pretty well.
Yeah, from my vantage point, you did an amazing job. So kudos to everybody, the entire Valvoline family or the family, because it takes all sides to make these things successful. So, John, I've loved this conversation. I love getting insights about your organization and how you lead. Where can people find out more about you and Valvoline and everything else you're doing?
Yeah, you know, our website is valvoline.com. We would love to have, you know, the listeners as a guest in one of our service centers, one of our 1800 service centers across the US and Canada. So you can check out a location, find a location that may be near you, you know, on that website. And then absolutely look me up on LinkedIn. So it's Jonathan Caldwell. I think it's JL Caldwell is kind of the tag after the LinkedIn address. So we'd love to connect with your listeners on LinkedIn as well.
That's awesome. We'll definitely have that information in the show notes. So people, if you know, your oil light is telling you to get the oil changed, so would you go book an appointment already? Yeah. You know, I'm, you know, of course, you know, as I shared in the pre-show, you know, I grew up in Detroit. My dad worked for Generous Motors and General Motors. I'm sorry if anybody from GM, I know family that still works there. So it's an inside comment, but you know, I my wife owns a GM car. So I was like, okay, you know, it's all good, but you know, I check my, you know, oil and, you know, keep tabs on it and know, you know, see the little sticker in the window. And it's like, okay, we're getting close. Let's go ahead and get that book now and beat the rush, you know, kind of thing. But no, I've really appreciated this conversation, John, and continued success to you and the family at Valvoline.
Great. Likewise, Michael. Thanks so much.
Thanks for listening to the Breakfast Leadership Show, part of the Breakfast Leadership Network. Visit breakfastleadership.com for tips on empowering your business and your life.